This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Maybe Someday by Colleen Hoover. Read by Zachary Weber and Angela Goethals.
A note about special content from Colleen Hoover and Griffin Peterson. Maybe Someday is more than just a story. It's more than just a book. It's an experience, and one that we are excited and grateful to share with you. I had the pleasure of collaborating with musician Griffin Peterson in order to provide an original soundtrack to accompany this novel. Griffin and I worked closely together to bring these characters and their lyrics to life, so that you will be provided with the ultimate listening experience. It is recommended these songs be heard in the order they appear throughout the novel. Please visit the website at www.maybesomedaysoundtrack.com to access the songs and bonus material, should you wish to learn more behind the collaboration and implementation of this project. Thank you for being a part of our project. It has been incredible for us to create, and we hope it will be just as incredible for you to enjoy.
Prologue. Sydney. I just punched a girl in the face. Not just any girl. My best friend. My roommate. Well, as of 5 minutes ago, I guess I should call her my ex-roommate. Her nose began bleeding almost immediately, and for a second I felt bad for hitting her. But then I remembered what a lying, betraying whore she is, and it made me want to punch her again. I would have, if Hunter hadn't prevented it by stepping between us. So instead, I punched him. I didn't do any damage to him, unfortunately. Not like the damage I'd done to my hand. Punching someone hurts a lot worse than I imagined it would. Not that I spend an excessive amount of time imagining how it would feel to punch people. Although I am having that urge again, as I stare down at my phone, at the incoming text from Ridge. He's another one I'd like to get even with. I know he technically has nothing to do with my current predicament, but he could have given me a heads up a little sooner. Therefore, I'd like to punch him too. Ridge, are you okay? Do you want to come up until the rain stops? Of course I don't want to come up. My fist hurts enough as it is, and if I went up to Ridge's apartment, it would hurt a whole lot worse after I finished with him. I turn around and look up at his balcony. He's leaning against his sliding glass door, phone in hand, watching me. It's almost dark, but the lights from the courtyard illuminate his face. His dark eyes lock with mine, and the way his mouth curls up into a soft, regretful smile makes it hard to remember why I'm even upset with him in the first place. He runs a free hand through the hair hanging loosely over his forehead, revealing even more of the worry in his expression. Or maybe that's a look of regret, as it should be. I decide not to reply and flip him off instead. He shakes his head and shrugs his shoulders as if to say, I tried, and then he goes back inside his apartment and slides his door shut. I put the phone back in my pocket before it gets wet, and I look around at the courtyard of the apartment complex where I've lived for 2 whole months. When we first moved in, the hot Texas summer was swallowing up the last traces of spring. But this courtyard seemed to somehow still cling to life. Vibrant blue and purple hydrangeas lined the walkways leading up to the staircases and the fountain affixed in the center of the courtyard. Now that summer has reached its most unattractive peak, the water in the fountain has long since evaporated. The hydrangeas are a sad, wilted reminder of the excitement I felt when Tori and I first moved in here, Looking at the courtyard now, defeated by the season, is an eerie parallel to how I feel at the moment. Defeated and sad. I'm sitting on the edge of the now empty cement fountain, my elbows propped up on the two suitcases that contain most of my belongings, waiting for a cab to pick me up. I have no idea where it's gonna take me, but I know I'd rather be anywhere except where I am right now. Which is, well, homeless. I could call my parents, but that would give them ammunition to start firing all the "we told you so's" at me.
"We told you not to move so far away, Sydney."
"We told you not to get serious with that guy."
"We told you if you had chosen pre-law over music, we would have paid for it."
"We told you to punch with your thumb on the outside of your fist." Okay, maybe they never taught me the proper punching techniques, but if they're so right all the damn time, they should have. I clench my fist and spread out my fingers, then clench it again. My hand is surprisingly sore, and I'm pretty sure I should put ice on it. I feel sorry for guys. Punching sucks. Know what else sucks? Rain. It always finds the most inappropriate time to fall, like right now, while I'm homeless. The cab finally pulls up, and I stand and grab my suitcases. I roll them behind me as the cab driver gets out and pops open the trunk. Before I even hand him the first suitcase, my heart sinks as I suddenly realize that I don't even have my purse on me. Shit. I look around, back to where I was sitting on the suitcases, then feel around my body as if my purse will magically appear across my shoulder. But I know exactly where my purse is. I pulled it off my shoulder and dropped it to the floor, right before I punched Tori in her overpriced Cameron Diaz nose. I sigh, and I laugh. Of course I left my purse. My first day of being homeless would have been way too easy if I'd had a purse with me. "I'm sorry," I say to the cab driver, who is now loading my second piece of luggage. "I changed my mind. I don't need a cab right now." I know there's a hotel about a half mile from here. If I can just work up the courage to go back inside and get my purse, I'll walk there and get a room until I figure out what to do. It's not as if I can get any wetter. The driver takes the suitcases back out of the cab, sets them on the curb in front of me, and walks back to the driver's side without ever making eye contact. He just gets into his car and drives away, as if my canceling is a relief. Do I look that pathetic? I take my suitcases and walk back to where I was seated before I realized I was purseless. I glance up to my apartment and wonder what would happen if I went back there to get my wallet. I sort of left things in a mess when I walked out the door. I guess I'd rather be homeless in the rain than go back up there. I take a seat on my luggage again and contemplate my situation. I could pay someone to go upstairs for me. But who? No one's outside, and who's to say Hunter or Tori would even give the person my purse? This really sucks. I know I'm gonna have to end up calling one of my friends, but right now I'm too embarrassed to tell anyone how clueless I've been for the last 2 years. I've been completely blindsided. I already hate being 22, and I still have 364 more days to go. It sucks so bad that I'm crying. Great. I'm crying now. I'm a purseless, crying, violent, homeless girl. And as much as I don't want to admit it, I think I might also be heartbroken. Yep. Sobbing now. Pretty sure this must be what it feels like to have your heart broken. "It's raining. Hurry up." I glance up to see a girl hovering over me. She's holding an umbrella over her head and looking down at me with agitation while she hops from one foot to the other, waiting for me to do something. "I'm getting soaked. Hurry." Her voice is a little demanding, as if she's doing me some sort of favor and I'm being ungrateful. I arch an eyebrow as I look up at her, shielding the rain from my eyes with my hand. I don't know why she's complaining about getting wet when there isn't much clothing to get wet. She's wearing next to nothing. I glance at her shirt, which is missing its entire bottom half, and realize she's in a Hooters outfit. Could this day get any weirder? I'm sitting on almost everything I own in a torrential downpour, being bossed around by a bitchy Hooters waitress. I'm still staring at her shirt when she grabs my hand and pulls me up in a huff. Ridge said you would do this. I've got to get to work. Follow me and I'll show you where the apartment is. She grabs one of my suitcases, pops the handle out, and shoves it at me. She takes the other and walks swiftly out of the courtyard. I follow her for no other reason than the fact that she's taken one of my suitcases with her, and I want it back. She yells over her shoulder as she begins to ascend the stairwell.
I don't know how long you plan on staying, but I've only got one rule. Stay the hell out of my room.
She reaches an apartment and opens the door, never even looking back to see if I'm following her. Once I reach the top of the stairs, I pause outside the apartment and look down at the fern sitting unaffected by the heat in a planter outside the door. Its leaves are lush and green, as if they're giving summer the middle finger with their refusal to succumb to the heat. I smile at the plant, somewhat proud of it. Then I frown with the realization that I'm envious of the resilience of a plant. I shake my head, look away, then take a hesitant step inside the unfamiliar apartment. The layout is similar to my own apartment, only this one is a double-split bedroom with four total bedrooms. My and Tori's apartment only had two bedrooms, but the living rooms are the same size. The only other noticeable difference is that I don't see any lying, backstabbing, bloody-nosed whores standing in this one. Nor do I see any of Tori's dirty dishes or laundry lying around. The girl sets my suitcase down beside the door, then steps aside and waits for me to... Well, I don't know what she's waiting for me to do. She rolls her eyes and grabs my arm, pulling me out of the doorway and further into the apartment.
What the hell is wrong with you? Do you even speak?
She begins to close the door behind her, but pauses and turns around, wide-eyed. She holds her finger up in the air.
Wait, she says. You're not...
She rolls her eyes and smacks herself in the forehead.
Oh my God, you're deaf!
Huh? What the hell is wrong with this girl? I shake my head and start to answer her, but she interrupts me.
God, Bridget,
she mumbles to herself. She rubs her hands down her face and groans, completely ignoring the fact that I'm shaking my head.
You're such an insensitive bitch sometimes.
Wow, this girl has some serious issues in the people skills department. She's sort of a bitch, even though she's making an effort not to be one, now that she thinks I'm deaf. I don't even know how to respond. She shakes her head as if she's disappointed in herself, then looks straight at me.
I have to go to work now,
she yells very loudly and painfully slowly. I grimace and step back, which should be a huge clue that I can hear her practically yelling, but she doesn't notice. She points to a door at the end of the hallway.
Ridge is in his room.
Before I have a chance to tell her she can stop yelling, she leaves the apartment and closes the door behind her. I have no idea what to think or what to do now. I'm standing, soaking wet, in the middle of an unfamiliar apartment, and the only person besides Hunter and Tori whom I feel like punching is now just a few feet away in another room. And speaking of Ridge, why the hell did he send his psycho Hooters girlfriend to get me? I take out my phone and have begun to text him when his bedroom door opens. He walks out into the hallway with an armful of blankets and a pillow. As soon as he makes eye contact with me, I gasp. I hope it's not a noticeable gasp. It's just that I've never actually seen him up close before, and he's even better looking from just a few feet away than he is from across an apartment courtyard. I don't think I've ever seen eyes that can actually speak. I'm not sure what I mean by that. It just seems as if he could shoot me the tiniest glance with those dark eyes of his, and I'd know exactly what they needed me to do. They're piercing and intense. And, oh my God, I'm staring. The corner of his mouth tilts up in a knowing smile as he passes me and heads straight for the couch. Despite his appealing and slightly innocent-looking face, I want to yell at him for being so deceitful. He shouldn't have waited more than 2 weeks to tell me. I would have had a chance to plan all this out a little better. I don't understand how we could have had 2 weeks' worth of conversations without his feeling the need to tell me that my boyfriend and my best friend were screwing. Ridge throws the blankets and pillows onto the couch. I'm not staying here, Ridge, I say, attempting to stop him from wasting time with his hospitality. I know he feels bad for me, but I hardly know him, and I'd feel a lot more comfortable in a hotel room than sleeping on a strange couch. Then again, hotel rooms require money, something I don't have on me at the moment. Something that's inside my purse, across the courtyard, in an apartment, with the only two people in the world I don't want to see right now. Maybe a couch isn't such a bad idea after all. He gets the couch made up and turns around, dropping his eyes to my soaking wet clothes. I look down at the puddle of water I'm creating in the middle of his floor. Oh, sorry, I mutter. My hair is matted to my face. My shirt is now a see-through, pathetic excuse for a barrier between the outside world and my very pink, very noticeable bra. Where's your bathroom? He nods his head toward the bathroom door. I turn around, unzip a suitcase, and begin to rummage through it while Ridge walks back into his bedroom. I'm glad he doesn't ask me questions about what happened after our conversation earlier. I'm not in the mood to talk about it. I select a pair of yoga pants and a tank top, then grab my bag of toiletries and head to the bathroom. It disturbs me that everything about this apartment reminds me of my own, with just a few subtle differences. This is the same bathroom with the Jack and Jill doors on the left and right, leading to two bedrooms that adjoin it. One is Ridge's, obviously. I'm curious about who the other bedroom belongs to, but not curious enough to open it. The Hooters girl's one rule was to stay the hell out of her room, and she doesn't seem like the type to kid around. I shut the door that leads to the living room and lock it, then check the locks on both doors to the bedrooms to make sure no one can walk in. I have no idea if anyone lives in this apartment other than Ridge and the Hooters girl, but I don't want to chance it. I pull off my sopping clothes and throw them into the sink to avoid soaking the floor. I turn on the shower and wait until the water gets warm, then step in. I stand under the stream of water and close my eyes, thankful that I'm not still sitting outside in the rain. At the same time, I'm not really happy to be where I am, either. I never expected my 22nd birthday to end with me showering in a strange apartment and sleeping on a couch that belongs to a guy I've barely known for 2 weeks, all at the hands of the two people I cared about and trusted the most. Chapter 1. 2 weeks earlier. Sydney. I slide open my balcony door and step outside, thankful that the sun has already dipped behind the building next door, cooling the air to what could pass as a perfect fall temperature. Almost on cue, the sound of his guitar floats across the courtyard as I take a seat and lean back into the patio lounger. I tell Tori I come out here to get homework done, because I don't want to admit that the guitar is the only reason I'm outside every night at 8, like clockwork. For weeks now, the guy in the apartment across the courtyard has sat on his balcony and played for at least an hour. Every night, I sit outside and listen. I've noticed a few other neighbors come out to their balconies when he's playing, but no one is as loyal as I am. I don't understand how someone could hear these songs and not crave them day after day. Then again, music has always been a passion of mine, so maybe I'm just a little more infatuated with his sound than other people are. I've played the piano for as long as I can remember, and although I've never shared it with anyone, I love writing music. I even switched my major to music education 2 years ago. My plan is to be an elementary music teacher, although if my father had his way, I'd still be pre-law. A life of mediocrity is a waste of a life, he said when I informed him that I was changing my major. A life of mediocrity. I find that more amusing than insulting, since he seems to be the most dissatisfied person I've ever known. And he's a lawyer. Go figure. One of the familiar songs ends, and the guy with the guitar begins to play something he's never played before. I've grown accustomed to his unofficial playlist, since he seems to practice the same songs in the same order night after night. However, I've never heard him play this particular song before. The way he's repeating the same chords makes me think he's creating the song right here on the spot. I like that I'm witnessing this, especially since after only a few chords, it's already my new favorite. All his songs sound like originals. I wonder if he performs them locally, or if he just writes them for fun. I lean forward in the chair, rest my arms on the edge of the balcony, and watch him. His balcony is directly across the courtyard, far enough away that I don't feel weird when I watch him, but close enough that I make sure I'm never watching him when Hunter's around. I don't think Hunter would like the fact that I've developed a tiny crush on this guy's talent. I can't deny it, though. Anyone who watches how passionately this guy plays would crush on his talent. The way he keeps his eyes closed the entire time, focusing intently on every stroke against every guitar string. I like it best when he sits cross-legged with the guitar upright between his legs. He pulls it against his chest and plays it like a stand-up bass, keeping his eyes closed the whole time. It's so mesmerizing to watch him that sometimes I catch myself holding my breath, and I don't even realize I'm doing it until I'm gasping for air. It also doesn't help that he's cute. At least he seems cute from here. His light brown hair is unruly and moves with him, falling across his forehead every time he looks down at his guitar. He's too far away to distinguish eye color or distinct features, but the details don't matter when coupled with the passion he has for his music. There's a confidence to him that I find compelling. I've always admired musicians who are able to tune out everyone and everything around them and pour all of their focus into their music. To be able to shut the world off and allow yourself to be completely swept away is something I've always wanted the confidence to do, but I just don't have it. This guy has it. He's confident and talented. I've always been a sucker for musicians, but more in a fantasy way. They're a different breed. A breed that rarely makes for good boyfriends. He glances at me as if he can hear my thoughts, and then a slow grin appears across his face. He never once pauses the song while he continues to watch me. The eye contact makes me blush, so I drop my arms and pull my notebook back onto my lap and look down at it. I hate that he just caught me staring so hard. Not that I was doing anything wrong. It just feels odd for him to know I was watching him. I glance up again, and he's still watching me, but he's not smiling anymore. The way he's staring causes my heart to speed up, so I look away and focus on my notebook. Way to be a creeper, Sydney. There's my girl, a comforting voice says from behind me. I lean my head back and tilt my eyes upward to watch Hunter as he makes his way onto the balcony. I try to hide the fact that I'm shocked to see him, because I'm pretty sure I was supposed to remember he was coming. On the off chance that Guitar Boy is still watching, I make it a point to seem really into Hunter's hello kiss, so that maybe I'll seem less like a creepy stalker and more like someone just casually relaxing on her balcony. I run my hand up Hunter's neck as he leans over the back of my chair and kisses me upside down. "Scoot up," Hunter says, pushing on my shoulders. I do what he asks and slide forward in the seat as he lifts his leg over the chair and slips in behind me. He pulls my back against his chest and wraps his arms around me. My eyes betray me when the sound of the guitar stops abruptly, and I glance across the courtyard once more. Guitar Boy is eyeing us hard as he stands, then goes back inside his apartment. His expression is odd, almost angry. "How was school?" Hunter asks. "Too boring to talk about. What about you? How was work?" "Interesting," he says, brushing my hair away from my neck with his hand. He presses his lips to my neck and kisses his way down my collarbone. "What was so interesting?" He tightens his hold on me, then rests his chin on my shoulder and pulls me back in the chair with him. "The oddest thing happened at lunch," he says. "I was with one of the guys at this Italian restaurant. We were eating out on the patio, and I had just asked the waiter what he recommended for dessert, when a police car rounded the corner. They stopped right in front of the restaurant, and two officers jumped out with their guns drawn. They began barking orders toward us when our waiter mumbled, 'Shit.' He slowly raised his hands, and the police jumped the barrier to the patio, rushed toward him, threw him to the ground, and cuffed him right at our feet. After they read him his rights, they pulled him to his feet and escorted him toward the cop car. The waiter glanced back at me and yelled, 'The tiramisu is really good.' Then they put him in the car and drove away." I tilt my head back and look up at him. "Seriously? That really happened?" He nods, laughing. "I swear, Sid, it was crazy." "Well, did you try the tiramisu?" "Hell yeah, we did. It was the best tiramisu I've ever had." He kisses me on the cheek and pushes me forward. "Speaking of food, I'm starving." He stands up and holds out his hand to me. "Did you cook tonight?" I take his hand and let him pull me up. "We just had salad, but I can make you one." Once we're inside, Hunter takes a seat on the couch next to Tori. She's got a textbook spread open across her lap as she half-heartedly focuses on both homework and TV at the same time. I take out the containers from the fridge and make his salad. I feel a little guilty that I forgot tonight was one of the nights he said he was coming. I usually have something cooked when I know he'll be here. We've been dating for almost 2 years now. I met him during my sophomore year in college when he was a senior. He and Tori had been friends for years. After she moved into my dorm and we became friends, she insisted I meet him. She said we'd hit it off, and she was right. We made it official after only 2 dates, and things have been wonderful since. Of course, we have our ups and downs, especially since he moved more than an hour away. When he landed the job in the accounting firm last semester, he suggested I move with him. I told him no, that I really wanted to finish my undergrad before taking such a huge step. In all honesty, I'm just scared. The thought of moving in with him seems so final, as if I would be sealing my fate. I know that once we take that step, the next step is marriage, and then I'd be looking at never having the chance to live alone. I've always had a roommate, and until I can afford my own place, I'll be sharing an apartment with Tori. I haven't told Hunter yet, but I really want to live alone for a year. It's something I promised myself I would do before I got married. I don't even turn 22 for a couple of weeks, so it's not as if I'm in any hurry. I take Hunter's food to him in the living room. "Why do you watch this?" he says to Tori. All these women do is talk shit about each other and flip tables.
That's exactly why I watch it,
Tori says without taking her eyes off the TV. Hunter winks at me and takes his food, then props his feet up on the coffee table. Thanks, babe. He turns toward the TV and begins eating. Can you grab me a beer?
I nod and walk back into the kitchen. I open the refrigerator door and look on the shelf where he always keeps his extra beer.
I realize, as I'm staring at his shelf, that this is probably how it begins. First, he has a shelf in the refrigerator. Then he'll have a toothbrush in the bathroom, a drawer in my dresser, and eventually his stuff will infiltrate mine in so many ways, it'll be impossible for me ever to be on my own. I run my hands up my arms, rubbing away the sudden onset of discomfort washing over me. I feel as if I'm watching my future play out in front of me. I'm not so sure I like what I'm imagining. Am I ready for this? Am I ready for this guy to be the guy I bring dinner to every night when he gets home from work? Am I ready to fall into this comfortable life with him? One where I teach all day and he does people's taxes, and then we come home and I cook dinner and I grab him beers while he props his feet up and calls me babe, and then we go to our bed and make love at approximately 9 p.m. so we won't be tired the next day, in order to wake up and get dressed and go to work and do it all over again?
Earth to Sydney, Hunter says.
I hear him snap his fingers twice.
Beer, please, babe.
I quickly grab his beer, give it to him, then head straight to my bathroom. I turn the water on in the shower, but I don't get in. Instead, I lock the door and sink to the floor. We have a good relationship. He's good to me, and I know he loves me. I just don't understand why every time I think about a future with him, it's not an exciting thought.
Bridge. Maggie leans forward and kisses my forehead. I need to go. I'm on my back with my head and shoulders partially propped against my headboard. She's straddling my lap and looking down at me regretfully. I hate that we live so far apart now, but it makes the time we do spend together a lot more meaningful. I take her hand so she'll shut up, and I pull her to me, hoping to persuade her not to leave just yet. She laughs and shakes her head. She kisses me, but only briefly, and then she pulls away again. She slides off my lap, but I don't let her make it very far before I lunge forward and pin her to the mattress. I point to her chest. You, I lean in and kiss the tip of her nose, need to stay one more night. I can't, I have class. I grab her wrists and pin her arms above her head, then press my lips to hers. I know she won't stay another night. She's never missed a day of class in her life, unless she was too sick to move. I sort of wish she was feeling a little sick right now so I could make her stay in bed with me. I slide my hands from her wrists, delicately up her arms until I'm cupping her face, and I give her one final kiss before I reluctantly pull away from her. Go, and be careful. Let me know when you make it home. She nods and pushes herself off the bed. She reaches across me and grabs her shirt, then pulls it on over her head. I watch her as she walks around the room and gathers the clothes I pulled off her in a hurry. After 5 years of dating, most couples would have moved in together by now. However, most people's other halves aren't Maggie. She's so fiercely independent, it's almost intimidating. But it's understandable, considering how her life has gone. She's been caring for her grandfather since I met her. Before that, she spent the majority of her teenage years helping him care for her grandmother, who died when Maggie was 16. Now that her grandfather is in a nursing home, she finally has a chance to live alone while finishing school. And as much as I want her here with me, I also know how important this internship is for her. So for the next year, I'll suck it up while she's in San Antonio and I'm here in Austin. I'll be damned if I ever move out of Austin, especially for San Antonio. Unless she asked, of course. Tell your brother I said good luck. She's standing in my bedroom doorway, poised to leave. And you need to quit beating yourself up, Ridge. Musicians have blocks, just like writers do. You'll find your muse again. I love you. I love you too. She smiles and backs out of my bedroom. I groan, knowing she's trying to be positive with the whole writer's block thing, but I can't stop stressing about it. I don't know if it's because Brennan has so much writing on these songs now or if it's because I'm completely tapped out, but the words just aren't coming. Without lyrics I'm confident in, it's hard to feel good about the actual musical aspect of writing. My phone vibrates. It's a text from Brennan, which only makes me feel worse about the fact that I'm stuck. Brennan. It's been weeks. Please tell me you have something. Me. Working on it. How's the tour? Brennan. Good, but remind me not to allow Warren to schedule this many gigs on the next leg. Me. Gigs are what gets your name out there. Brennan. Our name. I'm not telling you again to stop acting like you aren't half of this. Me. I won't be half if I can't work through this damn block. Brennan. Maybe you should get out more. Cause some unnecessary drama in your life. Break up with Maggie for the sake of art. She'll understand. Heartache helps with lyrical inspiration. Don't you ever listen to country? Me. Good idea. I'll tell Maggie you suggested that. Brennan. Nothing I say or do could ever make Maggie hate me. Give her a kiss for me and get to writing. Our careers are resting squarely on your shoulders. Me. Asshole. Brennan. Ah, is that anger I detect in your text? Use it. Go write an angry song about how much you hate your little brother, then send it to me. Me. Yeah, I'll give it to you after you finally get your shit out of your old bedroom. Bridget's sister might move in next month. Brennan. Have you ever met Brandy? Me. No. Do I want to? Brennan. Only if you want to live with two Bridgets. Me. Oh, shit. Brennan. Exactly. Talk to you later. I close out the text to Brennan and open up a text to Warren. Me. We're good to go on the roommate search. Brennan says hell no to Brandy. I'll let you break the news to Bridget since you two get along so well. Warren. Well, motherfucker. I laugh and hop off the bed, then head to the patio with my guitar. It's almost 8, and I know she'll be on her balcony. I don't know how weird my actions are about to seem to her, but all I can do is try. I've got nothing to lose.
Chapter 2. Sydney. I'm mindlessly tapping my feet and singing along to his music with my made-up lyrics, when he stops playing mid-song. He never stops mid-song, so, naturally, I glance in his direction. He's leaning forward, staring right at me. He holds up his index finger, as if to say hold on, and he sets his guitar beside him and runs into his apartment. What the hell is he doing? And oh my God, why does the fact that he's acknowledging me make me so nervous? He comes back outside with paper and a marker in his hands. He's writing. What the hell is he writing? He holds up 2 sheets of paper, and I squint to get a good look at what he's written. A phone number. Shit. His phone number? When I don't move for several seconds, he shakes the papers and points at them, then points back to me. He's insane. I'm not calling him. I can't call him. I can't do that to Hunter. The guy shakes his head, then grabs a fresh sheet of paper and writes something else on it, then holds it up. Text me. When I still don't move, he flips the paper over and writes again. I have a question. A question. A text. Seems harmless enough. When he holds up the papers with his phone number again, I pull out my phone and enter his phone number. I stare at the screen for a few seconds, not really knowing what to say in the text, so I go with, me, what's your question? He looks down at his phone, and I can see him smile when he receives my text. He drops the paper and leans back in his chair, typing. When my phone vibrates, I hesitate a second before looking down at it. Him, do you sing in the shower? I shake my head, confirming my initial suspicion. He's a flirt. Of course he is. He's a musician. Me. I don't know what kind of question that is, but if this is your attempt at flirting, I've got a boyfriend. Don't waste your time. I hit send and watch him read the text. He laughs, and this irritates me, mostly because his smile is so smiley. Is that even a word? I don't know how else to describe it. It's as if his whole face smiles right along with his mouth. I wonder what that smile looks like up close. Him.
Believe me, I know you have a boyfriend, and this is definitely not how I flirt. I just want to know if you sing in the shower. I happen to think highly of people who sing in the shower, and need to know the answer to that question in order to decide if I want to ask you my next question.
I read the lengthy text, admiring his fast typing. Guys aren't normally as skilled as girls when it comes to speed texting, but his replies are almost instantaneous. Me.
Yes, I sing in the shower.
Do you sing in the shower? Him.
No, I don't.
Me. How can you think highly of people who sing in the shower if you don't sing in the shower? Him.
Maybe the fact that I don't sing in the shower is why I think highly of people who do sing in the shower.
This conversation isn't going anywhere.
Me.
Why did you need this vital piece of information from me? He stretches his legs out and props his feet up on the edge of the patio, then stares at me for a few seconds before returning his attention to his phone. Him.
I want to know how you're singing lyrics to my songs when I haven't even added lyrics to them yet.
My cheeks instantly heat from embarrassment.
Busted.
I stare at his text, then glance up at him. He's watching me, expressionless. Why the hell didn't I think that he could see me sitting out here? I never thought he would notice me singing along to his music. Hell, until last night I never thought he even noticed me. I inhale, wishing I'd never made eye contact with him to begin with. I don't know why I find this embarrassing, but I do. It seems as if I've invaded his privacy in some way, and I hate that.
Me.
I tend to favor songs with lyrics, and I was tired of wondering what the lyrics to your songs were, so I guess I made up a few of my own. He reads the text, then glances up at me without a hint of his infectious smile. I don't like his serious glances. I don't like what they do to my stomach. I also don't like what his smiley smile does to my stomach. I wish he would stick to a simple, unattractive, emotionless expression, but I'm not sure he's capable of that.
Him. Will you send them to me?
Oh God, hell no.
Me.
Hell no.
Him.
Please.
Me.
No.
Him.
Pretty please.
Me.
No, thank you.
Him.
What's your name?
Me.
Sydney.
Yours?
Him.
Ridge.
Ridge. That fits him. Musical, artisty, moody type.
Me.
Well, Ridge, I'm sorry, but I don't write lyrics that anyone would want to hear. Do you not write lyrics to your own songs? He begins to text, and it's a really long text. His fingers move swiftly over his phone while he types. I'm afraid I'm about to receive an entire novel from him. He looks up at me just as my phone vibrates.
Ridge.
I guess you could say I'm having a bad case of writer's block. Which is why I really, really wish you would just send me the lyrics you sing while I'm playing. Even if you think they're stupid, I want to read them. You somehow know every single song I play, even though I've never played them for anyone except when I practice out here.
How does he know I know all his songs? I bring a hand up to my cheek when I feel it flush, knowing he's been watching me a lot longer than I initially thought. I swear I have to be the most unintuitive person in this entire world. I glance up at him, and he's continuing with another text. So I look back to my phone,
and wait for it. Ridge, I can see it in the way your whole body responds to the guitar. You tap your feet, you move your head, and I've even tried to test you by slowing down the song every once in a while to see if you would notice, and you always do. Your body stops responding when I change something up. So just by watching you, I can tell you have an ear for music. And since you sing in the shower, it probably means you're an okay singer, which also means that maybe there's a chance you have a talent for writing lyrics. So Sydney, I want to know what your lyrics are. I'm still reading when another text comes through. Ridge, please, I'm desperate. I inhale a deep breath, wishing more than anything that this conversation had never started. I don't know how in the hell he can come to all these conclusions without my ever having noticed him watching me. In a way, it eases my embarrassment over the fact that he saw me watching him. But now that he wants to know what lyrics I made up, I'm embarrassed for an entirely different reason. I do sing, but not well enough to do anything with it professionally. My passion is mostly for music itself, not at all for performing it. And as much as I do love writing lyrics, I've never shared anything I've written. It seems too intimate. I'd almost rather he had sent me a vulgar, flirtatious come on. I jump when my phone vibrates again. Ridge.
Okay, we'll make a deal. Pick one song of mine and send me the lyrics to just that one song. Then I'll leave you alone. Especially if they're stupid.
I laugh and cringe. He's not gonna let up. I'm gonna have to change my number.
Ridge, I know your phone number now, Sydney. I'm not giving up until you send me lyrics to at least one song.
Jesus, he's not going away.
Ridge, and I also know where you live. I'm not above begging on my knees at your front door.
Ah. Me. Fine. Stop with the creepy threats. One song. But I'll have to write the lyrics down while you play it first, because I've never written them out before.
Ridge.
Deal.
Which song? I'll play it right now.
Me. How would I tell you which song, Ridge? I don't know the names of any of them.
Ridge.
Yeah, me neither. Hold up your hand when I get to the one you want me to play.
He puts down his phone and picks up his guitar, then begins playing one of the songs. It's not the one I want him to play, though, so I shake my head. He switches to another song, and I continue to shake my head, until the familiar chords to one of my favorites meets my ears. I hold up my hand, and he grins, then starts the song over from the beginning. I pull my notebook in front of me and pick up my pen, then begin to write down the lyrics I've put to it. He has to play the song 3 times before I finally get them all out. It's almost dark now, and it's hard to see, so I pick up my phone.
Me. It's too dark to read. I'll go inside and text them to you, but you have to promise you'll never ask me to do this again.
The light from his phone illuminates his smile, and he nods at me, then picks up his guitar and walks back inside his apartment. I go to my room and sit on the bed, wondering if it's too late to change my mind. I feel as if this whole conversation just ruined my 8 o'clock patio time. I can't go back outside and listen to him ever again. I liked it better when I thought he didn't know I was there. It was like my own personal space with my own personal concert. Now I'll be way too aware of him to actually enjoy listening, and I curse him for ruining that. I regretfully text him my lyrics, then turn my phone on silent and leave it on my bed as I go into the living room and try to forget this ever happened.
Ridge. Holy shit. She's good. Really good. Brennan is going to love this. I know if he agrees to use them, we'll need her to sign a release and we'll have to pay her something. But it's worth it, especially if the rest of her lyrics are as good as these. But the question is, will she be willing to help out? She obviously doesn't have much confidence in her talent, but that's the least of my worries. The biggest worry is how I'll persuade her to send me more lyrics, or how to get her to write with me. I doubt her boyfriend would go for that. He has to be the biggest jerk I've ever laid eyes on. I can't believe the balls of that guy, especially after watching him last night. He comes outside on the patio and kisses Sydney, cuddling up to her in the chair like the most attentive boyfriend in the world. Then, the second she turns her back, he's out on the patio with the other chick. Sydney must have been in the shower because the two of them rushed outside as if they were on a timer, and the chick had her legs wrapped around his waist and her mouth on his faster than I could even blink. And it wasn't a first-time occurrence. I've seen it happen so many times I've lost count. It's really not my place to inform Sydney that the guy she's dating is screwing her roommate. I especially can't tell her through a text. But if Maggie were cheating on me, I'd sure as hell want to know about it. I just don't know Sydney well enough to tell her something like that. Usually the person to break the news is the one to catch all the blame anyway, especially if the person being cheated on doesn't want to believe it. I could send her an anonymous note, but the douchebag boyfriend would more than likely be able to talk his way out of it. I won't do anything for now. It's not my place, and until I get to know her better, I'm not in a position for her to trust me. My phone vibrates in my pocket, and I pull it out, hoping Sydney decided to send me more lyrics. But the text is from Maggie. Maggie. Almost home. See you in 2 weeks. Me. I didn't say text me when you're almost home. I said text me when you're home. Now stop texting and driving. Maggie. Okay. Me. Stop. Maggie. Okay. I toss the phone onto the bed and refuse to text her back. I'm not giving her a reason to text me again until she makes it home. I walk to the kitchen for a beer, then take a seat next to a passed-out Warren on the couch. I grab the remote and hit info to see what he's watching. Porn. Figures. The guy can't watch anything without nudity. I start to change the channel, but he snatches the remote out of my hands. It's my night. I don't know if it was Warren or Bridget who decided we should divvy up the TV, but it was the worst idea ever. Especially since I'm still not sure which night is actually mine, even though technically this is my apartment. I'm lucky if either of them pays rent on a quarterly basis. I put up with it because Warren has been my best friend since high school, and Bridget is, well, she's too mean for me to even want to strike up a conversation with her. I've avoided that since Brennan let her move in 6 months ago. I really don't have to worry about money right now, thanks to my job and the cut Brennan gives me, so I just leave it alone. I still don't know how Brennan met Bridget or how they're involved, but even though their relationship isn't sexual, he obviously cares about her. I have no idea how or why, since she doesn't have any noticeable redeeming qualities other than how she looks in her Hooters uniform. And of course, the second that thought passes through my head, so do the words Maggie said when she found out Bridget was moving in with us. I don't care if she moves in. The worst thing that could happen would be for you to cheat on me. Then I'd have to break up with you. Then your heart would shatter, and we'd both be miserable for life. And you would be so depressed you'd never be able to get it up again. So make sure, if you do cheat, it's the best sex you ever have, because it'll also be the last sex you ever have. She doesn't have to worry about my cheating on her. But the scenario she painted was enough to ensure that I don't even look at Bridget in her uniform. How in the hell did my thoughts wander this far? This is why I'm having writer's block. I can't seem to focus on anything important lately. I go back to my room to transfer the lyrics Sydney sent onto paper, and I begin to work out how to add them to the music. I want to text Sydney to tell her what I think about them, but I don't. I should leave her hanging a little while longer. I know how nerve-wracking it is to send someone a piece of yourself and then have to sit back and wait for it to be judged. If I make her wait long enough, maybe once I tell her how brilliant she is, she'll have developed a craving to send me more. It might be a little cruel, but she has no idea how much I need her. Now that I'm pretty sure I've found my muse, I have to work it just right so she doesn't slip away.
Chapter 3. Sydney. If he hated them, the least he could have done was send a thank you. I know it shouldn't bother me, but it does. especially because I never wanted to send them to him in the first place. I wasn't expecting him to praise me, but the fact that he begged so hard for them and then just ignored them sort of irritates me. And he hasn't been outside at his usual time in almost a week. I've wanted to text him about it so many times, but if I do, then it'll seem as if I care what he thinks of the lyrics. I don't want to care, but I can tell by how disappointed I feel that I do care. I hate that I want him to like my lyrics, but the thought of actually having a hand in a song is a little bit exciting.
Food should be here in a little while. I'm gonna get the clothes out of the dryer, Tori says.
She opens the front door, and I perk up on the couch when I hear the familiar sound of the guitar from outside. She closes the door behind her, and as much as I want to ignore it, I rush to my room and quietly slide out onto the balcony, books in hand. If I sink far enough into my chair, he might not notice I'm out here. But he's looking straight at my balcony when I step outside. He doesn't acknowledge me with a smile or even a nod of his head when I take my seat. He just continues playing, and it makes me curious to see if he's just going to pretend our conversation last week never happened. I sort of hope so, because I'd like to pretend it never happened. He plays the familiar songs, and it doesn't take me long to let go of my embarrassment over the fact that he thought my lyrics were stupid. I tried to warn him. I finish up my homework while he's still playing, close my books, and lean back and close my eyes. It's quiet for a minute, and then he begins playing the song I sent him lyrics for. In the middle of the song, the guitar pauses for several seconds, but I refuse to open my eyes. He continues playing, just as my phone vibrates with an incoming text. Ridge, you're not singing. I glance at him, and he's staring at me with a grin. He looks back down at his guitar and watches his hands as he finishes the song. Then he picks up his phone and sends another text. Ridge, do you want to know what I thought of the lyrics? Me. No, I'm pretty positive I know what you thought. It's been a week since I sent them to you. No worries, I told you they were stupid. Ridge. Yeah, sorry about the silence. I had to leave town for a few days. Family emergency. I don't know if he's telling the truth, but the fact that he claims he's been out of town eases my fear that he hasn't been out on his balcony because of me. Me. Everything okay? Ridge. Yep. Me. Good. Ridge. I'm only gonna say this once, Sydney. Are you ready? Me. Oh God, no, I'm turning off my phone. Ridge. I know where you live. Me. Fine. Ridge. You're incredible. Those lyrics. I can't even describe to you how perfect they are for the song. How in the hell does that come out of you? And why can't you see that you need to let it come out of you? Don't hold it in. You're doing the world a huge disservice with your modesty. I know I agreed not to ask you for more, but that was because I really didn't expect to get what I got from you. I need more. Give me, give me, give me. I let out a huge breath. Until this moment, I didn't realize exactly how much his opinion mattered. I can't look up at him yet. I continue to stare at my phone for much longer than it takes me to read the text. I don't even text him back, because I'm still relishing the compliment. If he said he loved it, I would have accepted his opinion with relief, and I would have moved on. But the words he just texted were like stairs stacked one on top of the other, and each compliment was like me running up each step until I reached the top of the damn world. Holy crap. I think this one text just gave me enough confidence to send him another song. I never would have predicted this. I never imagined I would be excited.
Food's here, Tori says. You want to eat out here?
I tear my gaze away from the phone and look at her. Yeah, sure. Tori brings the food out to the balcony.
I've never really looked at that guy before, but damn, she says, staring hard at Ridge while he plays his guitar. He's really hot, and I don't even like blondes.
His hair isn't blonde, it's brown,